TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to Digging Deeper with D.D. Denslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second hour of Digging Deeper. This is me, D.D. Denslow. I've just had Nick Ashcroft on, we are plugging his event. So again, the website you need to go if you want to buy tickets for the weekend. Comedy event, comedy podcast weekend. It is www.comedypodcast.live. And yes, me and Rick will be live on stage Friday evening. We have no idea what we're going to talk about. Our plan is just to bring our usual banter and conversation and conspiracy to the live stage, to an audience for a question and answer. So please, if you want to have a weekend break and be amongst some awake folk and some quite prominent freedom fighters that are out there, like Katie Hopkins, like Right Said Fred, like Alistair Williams, the list goes on. The Ikes may also be in attendance. And actually, the guest I have sitting before me, Lawrence Eastman, has actually spoken and had conversation with David Icke, I do believe. I may actually ask some questions on his conversation and how his conversation went with David Icke. And who knows, we might just go down the whole conspiracy angle. Okay, so what's in the news at the moment? Some news updates. I'll tell you what isn't in the news. The whole China COVID story didn't take off, did it? Remember when they dropped all their restrictions and it was going to be a massive wave of COVID? They've dropped their restrictions. They've stopped. They've allowed their public to travel again. Nobody bought it. The public in the West weren't snapping at the apps of the MSM on this story, and so they dropped it, and it has completely disappeared from the mainstream narrative. Going from China, where I'm going to fly right across to Afghanistan, a COVID-like respiratory disease kills 21 in Afghanistan. This is a story coming from the Daily Mail. 21 people have been killed by a mysterious disease in Afghanistan, local media has claimed. Cases have all been logged in the mountainous Wakhan region in the northeast of the country, which borders Kazakhstan and Pakistan. Health chiefs have now dispatched to the area to investigate the nature of the illness. Now, I actually reported on a similar story that was reported by RT. It was in conversation with Hesham McLean, who has a show a bit later on today, so check that out. Our discussions were, was this why the US military left? Had they left something behind, or was it just another attempt, a bit like monkeypox, to frighten people? But the thing about this story is that this illness mainly affects young people, and Bill Gates right now is in Australia, or was speaking to Australia, saying, oh, you guys better watch out for the next pandemic. It might be man-made. It might be really, really dangerous. I've just war-gamed it in my catastrophic contagion, which is basically just a rerun of Event 2021, or Event 201, should I say. And but this catastrophic contagion scenario that they played out, that they war gamed with all the top players, you know, John Hopkins University, the WEF, the WHO, UN, they need the CIA there, of course, because it's a health problem. So we must have the most dubious intelligence service that exists as part and parcel of the conversation, which seems very strange. But in that scenario that they were creating or discussing or imagining, it was young people and children that were the prime targets or the prime fatalities caused by the imaginary virus in that scenario that they played out. So it's quite interesting, this story. It's the second time that I've come across it. It's affecting 1,000 children have been infected and respiratory diseases in the province over the last month. So quite interesting, probably worth just keeping your eye on it. But don't play into the MSM narrative, because if they're just trying to scare us into some other health crisis, the way that you'll do that is by really engaging with the mainstream media. Okay, coming up in about 1 minute, I've got Lawrence Eastman. We're going to be talking about Portugal. We'll probably talk about Ukraine. I've had a look at excess deaths, vaccine rates, etc. in Portugal. Lawrence is based in Portugal. I'm sure it's very nice and sunny. It's not here. So please stay right with us. And if you've missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Whew. And now there is never any reason ever to miss anything on TNT radio.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. This is me, Dee Dee Denslow, on Digging Deeper. I'm speaking with Lawrence Eastman. He just sent me a message saying, very slick. I like it when people say that, because I actually suffer a bit of like imposter syndrome. I get anxiety about how I deliver and how I talk. I stutter a little bit. So it's really nice when a fellow podcaster gives me a compliment like that. Lawrence, how are you, mate?
Hey, Darren, I'm good. Always good practice to butter up the host.
Is that what you're all doing? You just want me to give you an easy ride over the next hour? I'm a friendly host, mate. I'm not out to get anyone unless you're a politician. Don't come and speak to me if you're a politician, because I'm a very, very different beast. Lawrence, maybe you're the first time on the show. You may well come and go on again in the future, especially if you're a good guest. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners and just tell them who you are and what you're about?
Hi, my name's Lawrence Eastman. I've got a podcast on YouTube called Eyes Wide Open, which I try to talk to some of the most red-pilled and based people that I can get on the show. We've done about 43 shows so far. Had a little bit of a lull over the Christmas period, and then just ramping back up again to put out some new episodes. That's kind of my intro.
And you're based in Portugal. Now, I had a look at the details of your podcast. I'll be honest, I haven't listened to any, so I do apologize for that. But I noticed that you had some quite prominent guests, and one of them was David Icke. Is that right? You actually got to speak to David Icke on your podcast?
But yeah, it was a wonderful privilege for me. I came quite early on in my podcast journey. It was like episode 8. And it was at the height of COVID, you know, when the full-on censorship operation was underway in YouTube and everywhere else. And David Icke at that point had been, I think he'd been cancelled everywhere. He'd been completely scrubbed off YouTube. And I think he did some interviews with Brian Rose, didn't he? Which kind of broke the internet, as it were, because it was on his own private channel, his own private server, Brian Rose. So yeah, I got the opportunity to speak to David, and I've, you know, been reading David Icke's book since 1997, The Biggest Secret being a real breakthrough moment for me and my journey, changed me, and I'll never look back since. So it was, you know, an opportunity to meet one of my heroes, really. And it was great. I had a really good conversation with him. It was more a case of, you know, sitting back and listening to what he had to say.
Yeah,
and he was talking about how the virus simply didn't exist. It was, you know, there was no virus. That was his main contention. And he said, you can talk about the lockdowns, you can talk about, you know, the vaccines, but he said, the moment you suggest that there is no virus at all, then that's when they close you down. And naively, I uploaded that interview to YouTube, and within 12 hours, they had closed it down and scrubbed it off YouTube. So I had to go and repost it in the gulags of BitChute and Odyssey. But yeah, it was a really great conversation. And I'd love to do it again with him sometime now that, you know, he's back online.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to talk to David Icke. The conversation I'd like to have with him would be, I used to think that I was a conspiracy theorist. I always have been. I've been very, I've studied that, the information. I've watched all the documentaries I did for years, for decades. And I listened to David Icke and I used to think, yeah, David, you're going too far, mate. You know, oh, that was quite good. And now, oh, not what reptile, don't do that. Or this or that, or the stuff about Saturn. I used to think, what do you mean they're going to lock us all down, lie about a virus, and then come with a solution in a needle? And he was saying this back in 2009, 2008. I thought, no, it's all great. It's all great entertainment listening to you talking about these sort of things. And lo and behold, here we are. How did he know? Did he tell you how he knows? Or is it just the fact that he could read?
Well, maybe it's just the fact that he could read, but he doesn't reveal his sources, does he? But the thing with David Icke is that, you know, he had to endure a decade or two of ridicule. And because his predictions were so far into the future, that it's taken 20 years for those things to come to pass. And whether it's, you know, the whole COVID operation or even Jimmy Savile. You know, he was one of the first people to put it out there about Jimmy Savile and the terrible things that are happening with child trafficking and stuff. He was one of the first people to put that out there and he got absolutely hammered for it. And it's only now that all of these predictions that he made have come to pass, which make him a respected elder statesman of this movement, because, you know, he's been there, he's done it, he's made the predictions, and he's suffered as a result of it. So it's great to see him have this renaissance now. And on iconic TV, is, you know, that's going from strength to strength, and it gives him a home, it gives him a platform. And I think it's really good to see.
Yeah, I've actually been on Iconic. I appeared on, I was interviewed for 10 minutes back in 2021 when I was standing in the local elections. So that's about as close, or it's not as close. I also have a regular guest, Lelaney Dowding. Do you know Lelaney Dowding? She'll be on with me next week. But I've never, you know, I've never got, never had David in front of me to talk to. But if I did, I would absolutely be wanting to shake his hand. So you're in Portugal. Maybe you could, can you tell me just a bit about just Portugal, about where you are? We had a brief conversation the other day. Maybe we just sort of repeat that again for the listeners, why you're in Portugal, what it's like, and what the difference is just for living conditions, etc., compared to the UK. And the UK is not good. It's not good.
I'm enjoying being a nomad, which is my, you know, natural design. So yeah, we're in Portugal at the moment for a period. It was during COVID again, you know, when things were getting heavy and it was looking like all of these crazy lunatic people wanted to stick us in camps, which they would have done if they could have got away with it. It was getting a little bit hot, you know, so I was looking around the world to find places that weren't as hardcore on the COVID restrictions as this country was. And I was looking at places like Mexico, Costa Rica, Croatia, and Portugal came up in the search. And I'd already done a little bit of research into Portugal because of its, it's got good residency status if you want to move there and stuff. And what I learned was I had a friend there and he was telling me, look, it's not being enforced here. And we went to check it out and it was, you know, it was a great, cool place to go and visit. And what we found out was that when we went, they just brought in the red zone, like something like 3 days after we arrived, you know, when the UK government issued those ridiculous control mechanisms against countries that weren't complying. And what we found out was is that Portugal only gave lip service to the first lockdown. They didn't believe it and they just did what they had to do in order, you know, to get along. But because they didn't enforce it and other countries were the same, is that the UK decided to bully nations that weren't playing ball and they put them on the red zone. And the red zone in Portugal was like really difficult for them because they don't have a massive GDP and they rely quite a lot on tourism, especially in Algarve, where we're based. It relies heavily upon British tourism and German, French. And once they got put in the red zone, that was it. They cut off the income that was coming in from the tourists. And it had a really harsh effect here. you know, because a lot of these businesses that are seasonal and they only open during the season, they couldn't even open at all. So they had zero income coming in, and the, you know, the welfare state isn't as communistic as it is in the UK. So they weren't happy about it, and it acted as a big stick to get Portugal to comply with what the UK wanted everyone to do. They didn't want any weak spots. They didn't want any escape routes. They didn't want people trying to find places where they could, you know, escape from these draconian measures that they tried to force through. So during the second one, Portugal played ball, right? They played ball in order to get this red zone restriction lifted. And they then became one of the highest vaccinated nations on earth. I'm not sure how far they went with that. I'm not sure how much to believe, whether those numbers are real or what. I don't know. But yet they were also, when the second one came and they wanted to do harsher lockdown measures here, they were quite enthusiastic about imposing things like masks, and you would have it in supermarkets and stuff. And they don't have the common law here, where we have in Britain. That was the one thing that we could use to defend our rights, was I'm exempt, man. And our exemption falls under our common law rights, which is why the UK government could not force you to do it. They said, oh, it's a medical exemption, but that was bullshit. That was to do with our rights embedded in the common law of the country. And that's why they had to make up such lies and psychological games in order to try and trick us into complying, when you simply had to say, no, I'm exempt. In Portugal, they didn't have the same kind of system. It's a system built on Roman civil law, so they don't have a common law system here. So they were quite enthusiastic in trying to enforce some of the rules and regulations. And some of the conversation here is that they can be quite obedient to authority due to having 47 years of Salazar, who was the Portuguese dictator. He was in power for 47 years. So there's kind of that, a lot of that is kind of ingrained in the culture here. But once the restrictions are lifted, it was great. Everything back to normal. It was almost like it never happened here.
Yeah, it's really, really a real interesting point how, you know, some of the sort of, you know, the big players in the Western world, USA, UK, some of the European countries who did lock down immediately used, as you said, a big stick to hit smaller countries, say, no, you must lock down as well. We don't want our public seeing you sunning yourself on the beaches without masks on and all your shops open, because our public are going to get upset. And we're going to do that by cutting off a revenue stream to your country by not supplying you with our tourists. And I suspect a lot of that went on. And it's not something that might be very apparent or at the forefront of people's minds about how the pandemic was able to spread, or the lockdowns were able to spread across the planet, when actually all you needed is a few big countries to lock down, and then they could just hit everybody else and get them to comply. And you're suggesting that that's exactly what happened to Portugal and probably a lot of other smaller countries that were reliant on Western, say, for example, UK tourism. I find that very, very interesting. Okay, we're going to a break now. And when we come back, you sent me a YouTube video about a story about you used to own a pub, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to talk about that. So when we come back, we're gonna, about your pub, yeah, on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Patrick Henningsen.
Davos is in session. Try not to be too nauseated. The guest list is bigger than ever this year. There's tons of heads of state. All sorts of people are converging in Switzerland at the World Economic Forum to bask in this, the glow of Klaus Schwab and his new normal. They're all very jazzed up from the success of the pandemic. They're all really excited about all the progress that was made during the pandemic. And they're especially excited about all the thousands of people that have died suddenly. This is a source of great joy at Davos. There's a lot of glee. They're wringing their hands, hoping to see a few more 100,000 dead over the next few months, maybe over the next year. In that way, they can sort of gauge how well they did in their rollout of the experimental pharmaceutical cocktail. So, of course, Pfizer and everybody else is there. They're clinking champagne glasses. They cashed in their shares, the stocks. Everybody's chalked up their billions, and there's dead bodies dropping like flies as we speak. And they're all very, very excited about this.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Action Against Hunger is the world's hunger specialist, with the highest 4-star rating from Charity Navigator, and 93% of every dollar donated going directly to our humanitarian programs. Active and on the ground since 1979, innovating, advocating, empowering, and saving lives in over 45 countries. Nearly 95% of our staff serve in their home countries, braving conflict and difficult terrain to help 20 million strong, resilient people overcome unthinkable circumstances. From South Sudan to Yemen, from Somalia to Bangladesh, Action Against Hunger gets to hard-to-reach communities, providing aid where others cannot. Our teams are on call 24 hours a day and ready to get life-saving help into the field. The need is acute. 16 million children suffer from the most severe form of hunger. 2 million a year lose the fight to deadly hunger. And more than 5,000 children still die every day from hunger-related causes. There's a need to scale up, and a need for individuals and partners to support innovative programs around the globe. With your help, Action Against Hunger can train and mobilize even more local field teams. With your help, we aim to double the number of children receiving treatment for life-threatening malnutrition. With your help, we can keep saving lives. The world needs a better way to deal with hunger. Together, we're creating it for everyone, for good. Join us. Take action against hunger.
Visit actionagainsthunger.org. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Dismiss the talk of an amnesty. We've seen the biggest kill ever in medicine's history. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. You're here with me, DD Denslow, on Digging Deeper. I've got Lawrence Eastman on the show. We were just talking about Portugal. I've had a quick check on the live chat. People said, yeah, it's very, very interesting. It's not something that people really thought about, how the bigger, more powerful nations coerce not just their public, but smaller nations into complying with lockdown restrictions and the COVID narrative. Now, there's another story that you brought to my attention this afternoon or this morning before we come on the show. And this was about your pub. You used to be landlords, is that correct?
Yeah, that video is not about the pub, though. That's a separate story.
I do apologize. But have you got a pub story, though, yeah?
I used to have a pub, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a football pub in Anfield called the Paisley Gates, which I acquired just before COVID, and you know, we'd done it up and had it ready for the match, and we, you know, we were enjoying the success of Liverpool winning the league, you know, and the pub was packed, and then boom, you know, COVID hit and we had to close, or so we thought, you know. And I realized that I had an off license as well as I was on the license, so I found the loophole and I was able to continue serving pints for takeaway. One of only three pubs in Liverpool during lockdown, and the police would be in every day trying to shut us down. I said, well, there's the license. I had councillors complaining about us. We had a queue of people outside of the pub all drinking pints, because you couldn't get a drink anywhere, could you? You know, we were one of the few oases during that pandemic, and they kept pressuring me. They kept pressuring me. In the end, they said, we're going to take your license away from you. I said, but I'm complying with the law. There's the law. You're telling me what I can do, what I can't do. You had to serve pints with lids on. So we had to, you know, pull a pint, put a lid on, give it to the customer, and they go outside. And there was a huge queue of people outside the pub. And yeah, I got away with it as long as I could. So I was doing my bit for COVID. I was what was it called? An emergency worker, you know?
He was an essential worker. He was an essential worker.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what plenty of people thought as they were queuing up. This is essential. Was it good for business? Yeah.
No, it wasn't good for business. It was good to just keep the pub going as an act of defiance, you know, but it was, you know, they closed the business in the end, you know, because I moved on, sold the pub and got out of that, you know, that industry. But before that, I was in hospitality. I had Airbnb properties in Liverpool. I spent a few years building a portfolio of leased properties, and was doing okay. Building a business, and you know, COVID just closed it down. It took me 5 years to build and 1 week to kill it. You know, it felt quicker than building seven because, you know, all of a sudden no one was traveling to Liverpool. No one was getting hotels, and the hospitality industry, which was the fourth largest in the UK, was just brought to its knees, just completely brought to its knees. And happily, you know, I got out of that business and got into podcasting, which I much, much prefer. But the damage that they did to this country during those two and a half years was just phenomenal. I can't believe that they did it and they got away with it, because it was a lot bigger than, you know, this kind of idea of fighting a pandemic. It was an attack on our entire civilization, wasn't it? Our foundations of the things we hold dear, just basic business and restaurants drinking.
Did your business, your Airbnb business, did that really go to the wall as quickly as in a few weeks, or was it a bit drawn out? It went in really in 1 week. I mean, how did that manifest?
Well, you know, it was a bit more than 1 week. But the point being is that once the government said that you can't travel to cities, you can't stay in hotels, and people were scared as well. They didn't want to travel. Everyone was hiding in their homes. So all of these bookings that you've had as part of the business all get cancelled. Right, so they all get cancelled. No one's coming. There's no more bookings. And then, you know, you've still got to pay the rent. Yeah. And then the government tried to help out with all of these, you know, so-called schemes, but it was just a, you know, massive, massive scam.
Yeah. All these schemes are just money laundering. It's a money laundering exercise. I brought it out with my previous guest about the smart meters. I got a friend. He doesn't love his smart meter, but he sort of says, oh, it's quite good because I can see how much money I've got on there. And they keep putting money on. And I'm like, you know, mate, Rob, they're giving 150 quid to your smart meter. That goes straight to the energy supplier. That's taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. It's just money laundering. And now we're seeing it with, they've got a story here where, small businesses are being badly affected by or the knock-on effect of lockdowns. They reckon about 36% to 50% of small and medium enterprises are going to go to the wall in 2023. So we've still got this sort of cascading economic effect of destruction to small businesses. And one of the things that's really hurting small businesses is they've got to pay back COVID loans, and these COVID loans were to put up, you know, the Perspex screens and arrows on the floor and all these other stupid things that they wanted us to comply with. Make sure you stand on the dot. Do you see the economic disaster that's sort of being warned about in the mainstream media and alternative media like TNT Radio? Do you think this really, really sort of unfolding over 2023, and we're going to see a massive economic collapse, far worse than what we've experienced so far?
Well, the government spunked untold billions during COVID. Untold billions got spunked and pissed up the wall and given out to companies to do PPE and all that shit, right? Where did that money come from? Where did that money come from? Did it come from our treasury? Did it come from, you know, our finances? Or was it borrowed, more likely, from big international banks, interest rates, and they weren't paying it back? So how are we going to pay it back? So do you remember in Ireland, there was the government proposed that in order to pay back the loans, they were going to put the money on water meters, right? And the people would pay it back by an increased bill on the water meters. And there was uproar, and, you know, I can't remember if it stayed on. But I think, you know, all of this money that's been created out of thin air by international bankers, you know, they want it back, and they want it back with interest. And if we can't pay it back with money, how else are we going to do it? So all this idea of prices going up and bills going up, I think that's just a way of them recouping the money that was pumped into the system, you know?
It's all sort of a taxes by stealth, isn't it? And, you know, it's the same with that £150. They want their money back. Oh, no, we'll just put some £150 on the smart meter, and then we can send that off to the energy supplier, which ultimately just goes to the money men that created this imaginary money in the first place. Apart from now, they've laundered it, and by the time it gets back to them, it's not digits on a computer or a bit of paper. It's a bit of land or a bit of, you know, gold or something that actually has real value.
Economic hitman. Do you remember that guy, the economic hitman? And he revealed the scam. He says, you know, the international finance will go into a third world country, offer them all kinds of loans, but as security, they have to put up the water company or the electric company or other national assets that the people rely upon. And when they default in the loan because they increase the interest rates, you know, they say, okay, can't pay. Well, we're going to take the water company. We're going to take the oil. No, that's what goes on. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened during COVID in the UK. You know, assets of the country are pledged in order for us to receive these untold billions created out of thin air that was, you know, spent like confetti, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure that money that that was created had to be secured to something. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given it to them, would they? Wouldn't have given it to our governments to spend. Okay, we're going to a quick news headline. And when we come back, we'll have a look at, we'll continue this conversation with money. And we'll also sort of bring in Ukraine into the mix, because that's another place where our governments are spunking lots of taxpayer money. So stay right with us on TNT Radio.
What's happening?
Newsflash. TNT Radio News.
Hey! Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Morocco has slammed an EU resolution against press freedoms in the country, calling it an unacceptable attack on the nation's sovereignty. Mystery surrounds a spike in unexplainable deaths across Britain, with national statistics showing the country reporting 3,000 more deaths than usual every week. And a cloud of corruption continues to hang over Ukraine after a wave of ministers were either sacked or forced to quit their posts on Tuesday.
On air
and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. You're here with me, DD Denzel, on Digging Deeper. I'm talking to Lawrence Eastman. We were just talking about the hitmen of the economy who go into small third world countries like Sri Lanka, for example, and say, hey, you can have all this money. We're going to, you can, you know, here's massive loans from the IMF or from whoever it might be, the BIS, and they secure it against actual assets with real value. So they've swapped a load of paper, and then they come and take a business, or they take land, or they take resources, or gold, or labor. And you've suggested, actually, they've run out of third world countries to do this. Most of them can't ever real pay it back. Hey, let's start hitting the big boys like the UK, like the countries of the EU, like the USA. Do you think that that is something that has been going on? And what will be the ultimate outcome when, say, the UK gives up all the assets that it has to give up because it can't pay back the loans? It's impossible. There's interest attached. What happens to the UK? What's the ultimate goal of the financial economic collapse that we are going to witness quite possibly over the coming years? What's the ultimate goal of that, Lawrence? Total, be as conspiratorial as you like.
Total enslavement in digital gulags. That's the end goal. You know, but I don't think the UK is a new target. I think UK has been targeted as long as we've had moneylenders. You know, because the whole idea of moneylenders is to lend money at interest. And when invariably people can't pay back the interest, then they lose the asset that's being staked, right? So as the money creation system became more and more fake and phony, and fiat just became paper, then any type of loan in this system is, you know, you put up collateral, which is a real asset, be it a business, be it a home, be it any other physical tangible asset as security, and they give you paper or credit that is literally being created out of thin air, right? So that's what you stake, and they stake just bits of paper. Now, because they also control the economy, then they can control the interest rates or inflation so that it makes you impossible for you to pay back, not through any fault of your own, because they have manipulated the economy. And as a result, when that happens, it's like musical chairs. If you're not sitting in the chair when the music goes off, then you have to hand over the assets that you've pledged for this fake money over which they have a monopoly. And I think, you know, it's gone on for centuries, this entire system, and the UK has been bludgeoned with it. And I think they go through phases, you know, where they'll, you know, do a new move. The whole privatization of national assets You know, that was just a way of transferring the wealth of the nation into the hands of just a few plutocrats. You know, because if you look at some of the industries that have been privatized, we still pay for them. We still pay for the railways, the rail network. And we give the license to privateers to try and get as much money out of the public as possible. So yeah, it's an entire scam, the entire financial system. I think they perfected it here and in the West, and then they went off to third world countries to, you know, enslave them in debt and hand over the assets of their nations.
So we're talking about, you know, money creation out of thin air. They've spunked it on COVID loans. We have, you know, the track and trace, $39 billion for an app. That's how much the track and trace app cost. That never really ever got used. There's a whole load of things that were paid for that were never needed or didn't work. And one of the things that we are now spunking billions and billions, and it's not just the UK, it's most of Europe, the USA, Australia, the Five Eyes, is on this conflict in Ukraine. Is the conflict in Ukraine just an extension of COVID in terms of money creation and funneling it into, for example, the military-industrial complex? Or is there a real need for this conflict, depending on your point of view? I don't side with my own country. I don't believe that it should be. We should be involved in what's going on in Ukraine in any way. Is there a real need for that actual conflict, or is it just a money laundering exercise?
The animosity between Russia and England goes back 300 years at least, and it's called the Great Game. And it's been going on for 300 years, and there's been multiple conflicts where the British Empire have tried to resist Russia's advancement and their empire, and the same from Russia to England. So this is an ongoing geopolitical conflict for battle over territory. But in terms of Ukraine is one of the most corrupt nations on earth, you know. And yeah, absolutely, money has been laundered through there in their billions. The game is to milk the taxpayer, to get as much money out of the taxpayer as possible, including future generations, get it out the country where it's no longer tracked or traced, and then they bring it back in nice and clean. No, but in terms of what's happening in Ukraine, it's a tragedy. It's a real tragedy. And I've been watching some of the videos coming out over the past week or so of just men being conscripted, forced conscripted off the streets, where the Zelensky regime are knocking on people's doors and dragging people off the street and bundling them into cars and bundling them into coaches, sending them to the front line, giving them 2 weeks worth of training, giving them a gun and saying, off you go. And these guys are walking into the artillery fire of the Russian military, and it's just a total meat grinder. It's an absolute tragedy. What it means, though, I think it's an absolute critical point in modern history of whether Russia win or the West wins, because it's going to tip the balance of power in Europe, either towards Russia and her allies or towards the unipolar world of the American and British empire, as it were, under NATO. So I think that what happens there is going to be critical. I hope, you know, the hostilities come to an end sooner rather than later, because no more loss of life is required there. The Ukraine can't win. I can't see how they can win and how they can resist Russia's advancement into Ukraine. I feel as if it's a real flashpoint, because the West seems to want to escalate it with sending weapons to Ukraine. But when you look into the actual details of the weapons they're sending, like tanks, for instance, right? You know, these tanks are highly sophisticated military hardware. You can't just jump in a tank and start driving it and know how to fire the guns. You've got to be trained. The training takes months. You know, a massive, massive portion of the Ukrainian army is gone. So when they send these Leopards and the other, you know, British tanks, who's going to drive them? Who's going to operate them? What's the plan? What is the strategy? And the numbers that they're sending them in is just, you know, infinitesimal, 20 tanks. Yeah. To even resist Russia, who have a tank arsenal, very famous tank arsenal of at least 1,000 tanks, and they're going to put up, what, 20? So I don't understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, if they even have a strategy, or more likely they're totally incompetent because the people who are running America and Britain is just a totally corrupt empire, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to Patrick Henningsen, who does, he has his own show. He actually lives in Plymouth, honorary Plymouthian. He made a very, very poignant point. The USA have never actually been in a war or a conflict since the Second World War where they faced an opposition who could quite comfortably or is at least equal in terms of military capability. It's all right going into Iraq, blowing up a few Iraqis and a few of their old T-34 tanks that are dated back from the 70s, which is the only real opposition that the USA have actually faced in recent years. And even then, it looks like, I don't want to say they struggled, but
Even in the Second World War, Russia, the Soviet Union, did most of the damage, and America came in very late when Germany were already beaten, you know, and took the glory.
Yeah, and you know, Nazi tried to take on the Russians. It didn't work out very well for them. First, the winter got them, and then the massive and quite impressive ability to churn out an army and a fighting force. You know, they had their tanks. I can't remember the name of the tanks that they had that the Russians had, but they were churning out thousands and thousands and thousands, and no one could meet that sort of industrial output. And to think that Russia can't do the same again is very short-sighted of America. And you're right, I think there is incompetence, a lack of battle or war experience against a country who does really mean business. And it's the same with China. I think if the USA are spoiling for fights with Russia and China, and it looks very, very clear that that's the case, the same with my own country, your country, the UK, I think we're going to come off second best. And I just want to make a touch on what you were saying about the poor Ukrainian men who are being conscripted and sent off to their death as cannon fodder. You know, I've seen pictures of Ukrainian men dressed as women, so they could go outside and do some food shopping in the hope that nobody spots them. And there are new laws that the Zelensky regime, as you called it correctly, have put in place for things like desertion, leaving your position, leaving your combat position, refusing to fight. And there are serious, serious penalties for probably the last few remaining men for not complying and running off towards Russian firepower. It's a tragic situation in Ukraine, and it's the West who are making it worse by looking for peaceful solutions. The peaceful solution is we can get peace by sending more weapons. This has actually been stated. Final comments before we go to a break on the Ukraine situation, Lawrence.
I don't understand what the West's objective is. No, is it simply just to grind Russia down? And with America is a sea power, Britain is a sea power, Russia is a very famous land empire. You know, they control huge swathes of Asia, Russia, Central Asia. These guys know how to fight on land.
Yep.
You know, that's what their specialty is. Whereas Britain and America are a sea and air power. They've never really been a land power. So this showdown is going to determine the future of the West, maybe the world, you know, because Russia talks about what their struggle is an existential struggle, in that the West doesn't just want to capture Ukraine. It wants to continue into Russia, dismantle it, dismember it, balkanize it, is what they're saying that the West wants to do. So if that's true, then Russia are fighting an existential struggle, which is for their very survival. So yeah, they're going to fight, and they're going to fight to the last man. Are the West going to do the same? Well, right now they're using a proxy army. They're using the Ukrainian people to fight their war for them. What happens when they run out of Ukrainians? Who's next in line to be the cannon fodder for the West? Is it going to be the Polish, the Romanians? I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to ship in hundreds of thousands of men to take on Russia? I mean, I think the combined military of the UK, France and Germany wouldn't even match the mobilization of the 300,000 odd men that Russia have just done from reservists. Mm-hmm. The British military wouldn't even fill Wembley. And so what the hell are they doing risking this escalation into a world war against Russia? I mean, why are we even involved? I mean, what's the political line of why we are committing our treasure, you know, billions of taxpayers' money into Russia, our military hardware? What's the objective?
I think it's a money laundering exercise. I also think the West is disarming itself deliberately, and I don't necessarily understand why, unless the world controllers, you know, the people right at the top of the pyramid, are actually looking at how can we transfer power from the West to the East, and they might be using this conflict of Ukraine as a tool to allow that to happen. Well, we're going to a quick break, and then when we come back, I will be talking about vaccines, excess deaths, vaccine injuries. I've got some statistics, including a quick look at what's going on in Portugal. So stay right with us on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
All right, listen up, all of you boob lovers. I come bearing news. You may soon be able to see bare breasts on Facebook and Instagram. Now, before you get too excited, you need to know that the breasts on display will be limited to those belonging to trans and non-binary users. Women who are born female, their breasts will be seen only in your imagination. It's wokeness at its sickest. You can blame or credit Meta's oversight board for this breastful mess. Is that even a word? But it's not fair, you say? Well, Michael Huff, an LA-based attorney who was formerly a lesbian and who has transitioned to being a man, says the new policy is a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, telling the New York Post that cis women's breasts have been sexualized. However, breasts are not sex objects. They are to feed children, the original purpose for breasts. When balancing the interests of anyone's equal rights against another's, our individual rights and liberties must win, or we face a soapy, slippery slope. He didn't say soapy. So there you have it, the latest on the Free the Nipple movement. And yes, that movement is real. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. Even the smallest amount detected will cost your license. Drug drive and you'll get caught, long after the high is gone. Think road safety. A message from the Government of South Australia.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking! Down!
TNT.
We have the best adverts on TNT Radio, and I'm sure if we kept repeating that, I would have drifted off into some sort of hypnotic... Yeah, don't take meth. Yeah, don't take meth, full stop.
Just say no, kids, just don't take meth.
Yeah, we have the best adverts on TNT. Vaccination rates in Portugal, I'm coming back. As of October 2021, so we're going back a little bit, the vaccination rate in Portugal was at 85%. I think it's at now approaching 95%. Reasons being was a highly organized vaccination program, and that there is very, very few people who are deniers or vaccine deniers, they're saying here, or are vaccine hesitant. Why are such a high rate of vaccinations? Just from your experience of the public, you talked about compliance, and also the vaccination or the excess death rate in Portugal is roughly the same as the UK's at the moment, and is hovering around between sort of 15 and 30%. And actually, we see this correlation between high vaccination rates and high excess death rates around the world. So first question was, why did Portugal have such high vaccination rates?
This is pure speculation, right? Of course. I don't know enough to state any facts, but this is quite a bureaucratic country in that it's slow. You want something done, it's slow to happen. The bureaucracy here is slow, right? So I struggle to get my head around how they were able to implement at rapid speed vaccination program that's never, ever been seen before. So I'm very skeptical about the facts, the numbers, anything to do with that. I just think everything's a pack of lies. But if those numbers are true, why were they so compliant? Well, like I touched upon earlier, there seems to be in countries that were under dictatorships for long periods, like they were here under Salazar. Now, I don't know enough about Salazar, but what I do know is that he was in power for 47 years. He was a school teacher originally, or a university teacher. He wasn't your normal school teachers, mate. No, it wasn't your normal typical military man, is what I'm trying to say. He didn't come from the military, which most dictators normally do come from. And he ruled for 47 years here and didn't get the country in debt. He wouldn't lend money off the IMF, which is an interesting little bit of information. Anyway, so you could say that they've been conditioned over a long period to accept authority, trust the government, and go along with it. A little bit like a lot of people here went along with it, you know? But when you've got one figure like that, and you had the Salazar regime, I think that may have had something to do with it. And then in 1997, I think it was, you had something called the Carnation Revolution. And that's when the socialists, the communists took power. You know, that was the changing of the guard. So I think there is a cultural thing, possibly pure speculation. It's only from my experience. It's not a fact. But I'm suspicious of whether the Portuguese government rolled out such an effective vaccine campaign. Because think how difficult it was to do that. You know, something that's never been done before on a mass level really quickly, and what, 94% of the population were jabbed. Not sure to go along with it. But if you're saying there's excess death numbers here, I don't know those numbers. I've not heard them before. Then, you know, that's definitely something to take on board. But you don't hear anything about COVID here anymore. It's gone. It's completely gone. There's nothing in the news. There's nothing in the newspapers. You know, so as far as the Portuguese are concerned, it's over. It's gone. Let's get back to business.
In a way, I wish that was the same here in the UK, although, you know, the average person has forgotten about it. They've forgotten what's happened, you know, 2 weeks ago. But if you go onto social media and you go into the political world and you have a look at what's going on in Parliament and you have a look at the statistics in the UK, excess deaths is the big story out there, even if it's going unheard by the general public. And there'll be a reason for that. They don't want the general public to find out about the fact that in the UK we're over 3,000 extra people are dying.
Well, there's a revolt happening, week, isn't there? There is a revolt happening, right? And they can't suppress this revolt, because if you've lost someone dear to you and you've got a loved one who's died as a result of a vaccine injury, then you're going to be fighting for justice. No one's going to be silencing you. You know, they can't use the same kind of free speech oppression when you're dealing with thousands of people who've faced personal loss in their lives. That's a different ball game, right? And to see the demonstration that happened over the weekend, was it just gone? It was quite powerful. It was potent, and it's only going to gather steam, because if we don't get justice, outrage will continue to build until we do get justice. And there's going to be plenty of people, including me, including you, and sounds like TNT Radio, who won't stop until we get justice, because the crimes that these people have committed are heinous, absolute heinous crimes, and they need to be brought to justice as soon as possible.
I mean, I would go as far as saying it's probably, and I'm not going to use any comparisons because people get acute, you know, called racist and other names, but probably the most serious crime against humanity that has ever been committed, and the harms, probably the greatest level of harms that have ever been committed. And I am including things like the Second World War and First World War and the other wars. Nothing compares to what's happened in the last 3 years. With regards to the vaccine, we've talked about, you know, what do you think, why do you think they're destroying the economies? And you mentioned control and enslavement. Why do you think that there was necessary for this mass vaccine program? Take the vaccine passport to one side. Do you think that there's something more serious and more sinister going on with it?
You can only speculate, because trying to get to the actual detail of the motivations of these people is quite difficult. So, you know, there's lots of talk of eugenics and population control, but kind of it stacks up sometimes and then it doesn't stack up. It's difficult to determine, you know, what is the motivation of these absolute psychotic psychopaths who are running the world. I don't know, because, you know, the people who took the vaccine fell for the propaganda. There's no better way to put it, because that's what it was. It was mass propaganda on a global scale. And a lot of people, mainly Western countries, I'm guessing, right? Mainly Western countries fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. So it was a lot of people fell for the propaganda. But the dissidents, the people who didn't fall for the propaganda, the ones who didn't take it. So if it was a cult, they're getting rid of the wrong people. If that makes sense, I don't know. So
is there something more dangerous coming down the line for those that didn't take it, and you're left with a compliant population? Quick final point.
That's why I'm in Portugal.
10 seconds. Hey, Lawrence, you've been an amazing guest. I definitely will be calling upon you again.